This is a download from the Post Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
First of all, I must thank Dr. Hayes for the faith he has put in my capacities as a discussant. I hope to be up to the task because in the last years I've been concentrating more on microeconomic issues, debates on capital and so on and so forth. Indeed, I've been trying to write a non-neoclassical introduction to microeconomics at a rather advanced stage, and I'm putting my provisional chapters one by one on my web page that I would be glad to give to anyone. And so there may be some literature in the field discussed by Professor Park that I do not really totally master. But I'll try my best. Now, this is part of an attempt to connect Sraffa and Keynes. So first question, why connecting them can be useful? Well, the point is that we do need, even in an analysis that determines outputs as determined by aggregate demand, or more specifically by the autonomous components and aggregate demand of aggregate demand and the multiplier, we still need a theory of prices. And Keynes's theory of prices was, for some aspects, in my opinion, not very convincing. For example, the decreasing marginal product of labor, Keynes justifies it mostly because he thinks that when production expands, firms start to use outdated equipment which was kept there and not utilized. I don't think that is empirically very robust as a theory. Indeed, it seems to me empirically vastly demonstrated that the marginal product of labor, or the net marginal product of labor, to talk of Marshall's term, is not decreasing for rather vast variations in output. So also, Keynes has, because of his theory, that when the rate of interest decreases, and this stimulates investment, and this stimulates employment, what happens is that the real wage decreases. Now, the theory of long period prices has argued that this cannot go on for long. It will be very quickly reversed because there is a connection between rate of return on capital and real wages. The decrease in the rate of interest, if there is competition in the economy, will cause firms to decrease prices relative to other costs, because their costs have decreased, because the rate of interest is a cost. So this will raise real wages. By the way, this is admitted by the people who have admitted that investment also depends on an accelerator component, even within a neoclassical framework. Dornbusch and Fisher, referring themselves to Jorgensen, consider that investment is made to have the capital stock which is adequate to produce expected output. But then what they have in mind is the movement of firms along isoquants, so that when the rate of interest goes down, firms want to produce the expected output with more capital and less labor, very neoclassically. But this means that they're moving along an isoquant along which the real wage is increasing. So you see, the moment one goes out of the very, very short period, we do need a theory which concentrates on normal prices. And on this, I have been sometimes criticized by people who say, but look, this tendency of prices to normal prices, to prices that yield a uniform rate of return, where is it? We don't observe it. But I think that there is a lack of perspective. What one must look at is the potential differences in rates of return on capital relative to the actual observed differences. Now, if you look at the potential differences, they could easily be that the rate of profit in one industry is 10,000% and in another industry is zero. Now, this is simply not observed. The differences in reality are very small. they are within a very narrow range, which can then be explained by introducing imperfections to competition, network advantages, like obviously Bill Gates gets in first and he gets enormous advantages because that's a very special market, or anyway, barriers to entry of some other types. But clearly, prices are determined by normal average costs rather strictly. How otherwise would you explain that prices of computers have gone down as people have been able to produce them at lower costs? Why would you explain why a cup of coffee costs so much less than a car? Unless you look at this tendency of uniform rates of return, you cannot explain these things. So I fully agree with Professor Park, and although I think perhaps he goes a bit too far in arguing that prices are precisely prices of production. Of course, in reality, you would have Machelian deviations in the short period from these prices, etc., etc. I also fully agree on how he approaches the issue of determination of quantities. I would like to point out how I think that is necessary even to Zrafa. I should say this. Professor Park has used the term, I think this is how Zrafa determines quantities. I don't think so. I think Zrafa takes quantities as given. He wants to be neutral. Okay. He also wants to refer to classical authors like Ricardo, who didn't have the multiplier. So he's neutral. But we, being after Zrafa and needing a theory of quantities because we've decided neoclassical theory doesn't work, we do have to turn to something, and then we turn to the principle of effective demand, which is obviously enormously useful. Okay, so I fully agree with Professor Park on that. And I also agree with him when, in a part he has had no time to illustrate, he says that he finds some Kaletskian arguments criticizable because one cannot assume a non-normal rate of utilization of capacity as persisting without firms doing nothing about it. Now, one could have a non-normal rate of capacity utilization persisting for a long time, but for reasons like the following one, for example. Suppose there is excess capacity because aggregate demand has gone down. Then firms want to invest less. The government, desperate, tries to fight this by incentivizing them in various ways, and this can slow down the process. And so, in fact, you can have that excess capacity remains above normal for a long time because it's not adjusted in time. But, of course, this does not destroy the fact that there is the tendency to adjustment if you only let firms do what they do. Now, then what does Professor Park want to do? He wants to find a way to make it very clear that investment need not at all be the investment that guarantees normal utilization of capacity. And then, towards the end, he wants to use this to try to understand better the things which may be constraints on an economy which is constrained by effective demand, and he makes connections with John Robinson's several concepts. Now, I find that the part where he illustrates these ideas in aggregate terms are quite convincing, but my doubts start when it comes to the disaggregated economy. There, his new, perhaps not new, I don't really know, but anyway, his original idea is the following. When you have an economy which is not in steady state growth, you can still determine the investments that each industry should be doing in order to have normal capacity utilization. Now, these are investments which must be determined by other industries in order to have full capacity utilization in one industry, because, of course, industries buy lots of goods, and an industry does not buy its own inputs. So you need a simultaneous solution of a system of equations. You need to find out what each industry should be investing in order that full capacity outputs are fully utilized in all industries. Okay? Now, this is certainly a nice new idea. My problem with it is that I find that these investments may be economically problematic. I find that they may be negative. Gross investments may be negative if the capacity of the economy is sufficiently different from the steady growth ones. And then if they have to be negative gross investments, what is the meaning? But there is also other problems with this concept. One is the following. It must be assumed that each industry has its capital stock vector in the appropriate proportions to start with. Now, that is not going to be the case any time in the economy there is some change, like, for example, innovations, technical progress, a new product, etc. And so when you do not have that stock is in the appropriate proportions, you have already a problem there in determining the warranted growth rates. Then you have a problem that concerns circulating capital. Of course, that is only a way of describing things to get a gist of the problem. Of course, Professor Park knows very well that the problem is with utilization of durable capital. But that needs to be stressed a bit, because not even that, I think, gets us out of the problem. The question is the following. What is normal quantity? Now, I think Professor Park has understood something quite important, which is this. In neoclassical traditional theory, normal quantities were the long period equilibrium quantities determined by traditional neoclassical theory when they believed you could treat capital as a single factor, and so you were determining rather persistent positions. Okay. In a classical approach, based on Keynes's approach, you can consider normal quantities, the quantities which are determined by something. Now, these quantities will be, for example, the quantities of circulating capital goods, which must be produced, otherwise production cannot go on, the quantities of consumption goods, and the quantities of that part of gross investment, which are, in fact, required for replacement. So one cannot talk of normal quantities for net investment, because net investments are arbitrary within the framework of the theory. One has to explain them through something else than reproduction needs. So I think Professor Park, although without saying it very explicitly, has put a finger on a problem of Garignani's and Ravagnani's consideration of what are normal quantities. Garignani says, the quotation he refers to says, the normal rate of profits corresponds to the rate which is being realized on an average as between firms and over time by the entrepreneurs who use the dominant technique. Now, that "and over time" is important. It means that Professor Park's single period with only circulating capital goods is not really appropriate if we interpret Sraffa's quantities as normal quantities. The point is that, allow me to read you a few lines from, I think, a good paper by Ravagnani, which has come out in the second volume of the recent two-volume editions of this very old conference on Sraffa from 1998. Yes, it took 10 years to come out. And I think his paper on produced quantities is nice. He says, in the traditional conception of both the old classical authors and the founders of marginal theory, the abstract notion of normal position has a sufficiently definite empirical counterpart. This theoretical position is in fact conceived as a guide to the average levels of the prices and quantities of the actual economy, taken over a time interval long enough to allow the competition of capitals to manifest its effects, and furthermore, to allow, through the repetition of transactions, for compensation of the accidental factors that may influence the actual prices. So you need time. That is also true for the multiplier. The multiplier doesn't work instantaneously. The multiplier takes time to work. So one would have to take a rather long time period. Garignani once talked to me about, if one wanted to estimate these things, about five-year moving averages. Because lots of things, agricultural productions, for example, change. and Christmas cakes, you know, are produced only once a year, and the quantities produced may change from year to year. So to have an idea of normal quantities, one needs a rather long time period. But anyway, in this rather long time period, many goods, including some that Professor Park treats as independently determined, will in fact be endogenous, necessarily. Even tractors, they are durable capital goods, but take rather little to be produced. So the amounts of tractors utilized in the period, if we have to look at a rather long period, can we really look at the amount of tractors existing at the beginning? So I think that Professor Park's idea that we can look at the degree of utilization of capital goods existing at the beginning of the period can only apply to very, not only long-lived, but capital goods that take a long time to be produced, you know, fixed plants, really. And to those, I think he's perfectly right to say that on any period, even long, even 5 years long, we are not going to observe normal utilization of capacity, which, of course, creates a problem of interpretation for Sraffa. But then Sraffa's coefficients, are they average observed coefficients or are they normal theoretically determined coefficients? And there too Sraffa, extremely clever person, leaves us to try to figure it out ourselves and to use it according to what we want to determine. And so everybody will be saying the quantity is produced according to the dominant techniques. But in Sraffa, the only hint about a dominant technique is when he talks about old durable capital goods which are now going to be utilized like lands and disappear after a while. But the problem of non-normal degrees of utilization of durable capital goods, which are, apart from this, in fact, dominant technology capital goods, he never talks about. So he leaves us with some problems. Another problem still with these with Professor Park's approach in the disaggregated part of his theory. Some existing, I've already eliminated that, because some existing capital goods and even some durable capital goods can be used by different industries. Lorries, for example, or things like that. So how can we determine the initial capital stock of an industry? Again, you have a little problem. So I think that it would be better to remain at the aggregate level. And when one wants to look at single industries, what may be sufficient to point out that investment is not the full capacity one, the normal capacity one, is to look at rates of utilization. Incidentally, a little observation. I think that Professor Park calling warranted rates of growth, these rates of growth that would maintain normal utilization in all industries, is not really faithful to Harrod. Harrod is very clear that a warranted rate is a rate that leaves people satisfied with what they had decided to do. While in his approach, these rates that maintain normal utilization would have to change continuously. So I think he would better have to use simply normal utilization rates rather than warranted. But that's a minor point, of course. I think that on... Oh, yes. The constraints. Sorry. The constraints. The point that Professor Park wants to arrive at is the constraints. Now, there again, I find that perhaps we do not need his analysis to really grasp these constraints, because it seems to me that they can all also be defined simply in other terms, which do not have to use his Z's that refer to these normal utilization rates of growth that are, I said, difficult to determine, sometimes impossible to determine. Of these constraints, some I really do not, I must say, fully understand. The self-replacing constraint, I don't see it's a constraint. Even Sraffa, when he talks about the self-replacing economy, is clear. In a footnote, he adds immediately, but I don't really care. It's just to make you understand the notion. The same prices would also need to satisfy the equations if the equations were, the quantities produced were in different proportions. And it's very clear that you can have an economy where you have negative net investments of some goods. Ravagnani, in this paper, has a little example where he has that corn and iron are produced. Corn, there is a positive net output after you've taken out consumption of workers, but in iron, which is not a consumption good, there is negative net investment. He says, why? Because iron is needed for the corn industry. And if, for some reason, the corn industry has been decreasing in size, people do not reproduce all the iron because they know the next time they're going to need less iron than they did. So that constraint I don't see. On the financial markets constraint, I have, I don't get into that, but I think that Professor Park is illegitimately generalizing Kaldor's constraint that those FIIs should be less than one to the single industries, and in the single industries they need not be in absolute value less than one. They can be very, very great. Full utilization, of course, is a constraint. Full employment is a constraint, but we can look at it at the aggregate level. You see, because this fact that even a neoclassical economist would say that you are not going to have always full utilization of single industries. You're going to have full utilization on the average because you have sales law. But any time you've had an innovation, for example, it's inevitable that some industries will want to grow differently and will have, for some periods, non-optimal, non-normal utilization. So I think that the important thing is what's happening in the aggregate. And on this, I agree with Professor Park in nearly everything.
In a sense, negative growth of industries allowed in my model. Because if you look at the realized state of the economy, the actual net rate of accumulation depends on the value of Z and also the rate of depreciation. The rate of depreciation depends on how intensively, say, the means of production are utilized. So if the level of investment, autonomous investment is very low, but somehow the depreciation rate is very high, then we are going to have negative rate of accumulation. So I mentioned in the paper that this model allows for a shrinking of some industries. So over time, some industries disappear and some other industries will come out, etc. But still, to make sense of the economy, I still think that self-replacing state conditions should be there, because even if the net accumulation is negative, consumption must be positive to make sense of the economy. Right? So the output, the quantity of output produced is more than replacement, but some of it will be used for consumption. Therefore, net accumulation may be negative, but still it should, the economy as a whole should support both replacement and also consumption. For that, we need to have the self-replacing state condition. And for the Kaldor's condition, phi is minus 1 to 1. I didn't really think about it very much because Kaldor gave it there, so I just took it there. Because it's
for the aggregate, though.
For the aggregate, yes. So I have to think about it. Thank you very much. And the concept of warranted rate. Yes, I know that Harold defined the warranted rate for growth as the rate of growth with which entrepreneurs are satisfied. But for objective things, I just interpret it as a normal utilization. Of course, you can introduce various other factors, but that is a sort of secondary matter. And if you remove all of them, as a first approximation, you can say that the Harold concept of a warranted rate of accumulation is more or less the same as mine. And actually, the concept of long period position capital stock is inspired by his idea of this. He talks about this the incremental capital output ratio. If the actual incremental capital output ratio is not what they planned, then they change the investment behavior, and that the normal incremental capital output ratio. From there, I derived this long period position capital stock. It's, one is in terms of flow, but mine is in terms of stock, so it's quite similar to that. And joint use of machine, yes, in reality, of course, but even in high mathematical theory, this joint use of machine is very complicated, and I don't think there's not very well developed theory. Of course, I know that Neri Salvadori and et cetera are trying to analyze this joint use of machine, utilization of machine, etc. But it is extremely complicated, and of course my model is just the first approximation. That's why I took just a circulating capital, even though there's some difficulty in interpreting of differing degrees of utilization of circulating capital, as you pointed out.
But suppose the corn can be used to produce corn, or can be used to produce bread. You are assuming that at the beginning of the period, the corn stock has already been divided.
That's
between
right.
Production of corn and production of bread. Is that legitimate?
No, in a sense, I started with that idea because, of course, if it is, we talk about fixed capital, it's there, so it is no problem.
Yes.
But
yes. So that's what I was saying. You know, with fixed capital, it works.
Yes, yes. That's what I was aware of, but I just decided to ignore it and just think, okay, you start from certain given stock of circulating capital, and my idea was this. Okay, you have 100 units of corn, and it may be used, just 8 units of them are used, and you have just 20 units of corn left. And then we can talk about how we can use this leftover corn. And that is where the concept of depreciation comes in, because this leftover corn, in one extreme, is that, okay, this leftover corn is intact, so it just move over next period, and it will be used as completely newly produced without any negative influence on the efficiency. Or second one is that, well, leftover corn is useless. You just throw it away. So in a year, you started with 100 units, but if you use just 80 units, and 20 units are just, we have to throw away. That is the depreciation rate of 100%.
And you need inequalities.
Sorry?
You need inequalities to throw away.
Equalities.
Inequalities.
No, that's why I have this, I didn't really discuss it, because when we discuss realized state of the economy, we have to specify the relationship between degree of depreciation, rate of depreciation, and degree of utilization. So there can be two extreme assumptions, and this relationship is in a sense specified by engineering, I suppose. And all in between, there are some other. In the very small note, there might be some carrying cost of corn. Okay, over time, there may be some carrying cost. If there's some carrying cost, then the rate of interest, the rate of depreciation will be higher. Mm. Or you may call it, not user cost, but it's carrying cost, the concept of carrying cost.
Yes.
Right. So anyhow, that
storage
is,
cost.
And the Strafford's coefficients, I just took it, not the average one, average of Jordan, but it's a normal, it's a engineering specified degree of utilization. So that's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.